Welcome to our final presentation on mutual funds. And in this presentation, we'll discuss a few odds and ends regarding mutual funds, mutual fund families, some of the aspects of mutual fund purchases, taxes and the like, investigative sources, resources for investigating and researching our mutual funds. And then we will concentrate on a single mutual fund that has been around for 80-odd years. And then we'll finish up with a characteristic of mutual fund investors that will seem counterintuitive at first, but once you realize how many people act, you'll realize that, oh yes, I do not want to be one of these individuals. So let's start on slide 62 with fund families. A family of funds exists when one investment company manages a group of mutual funds. For many decades, a mutual fund might have only had one mutual fund. The company might have just been one mutual fund that they did their investing with, just one mutual fund. And then as the industry evolved, they'd add one or two more funds. And then Fidelity comes along. They weren't the only ones, but they... They certainly were the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and just started creating fund after fund after fund after fund. And the idea was, and still is, you want to give your investors a one-stop shop, a shopping experience, so that they don't have to go anywhere else. They have every fund they would need. It turned out, in my humble opinion, they just created too many darn funds, gave people too many choices. But that's why there's chocolate and vanilla. You can move your money from one fund to another within the fund family and not have to pay the commissions, the back-end fees, all the other fees that are associated with what we discussed in our session on fees. But if the fund is in a taxable account, you're going to generate a taxable transaction because the IRS considers it a sale of an investment. Even if you're going just from one fund in the family to another fund, they look at it as a taxable transaction. If it's in a retirement account, 401k, 403b, Roth IRA, regular IRA, traditional IRA as it's called, then no, that does not generate the taxable transaction. And as we said, there were people who were buying and selling and buying and selling their mutual funds. And so the companies said, we can't let this happen. Some of them just won't let it happen. If you do it enough times, they'll just say, we don't want you as an investor anymore. Or as I said, a couple of them will say, look, you sold this mutual fund. You have to wait 30 days before you can buy it back. Or what they'll do is, sure, go right ahead. We'll charge you 2% if you do it within 30 days. If you move it back into that fund within 30 days, right? Whatever market timing you might get away with, which you won't get away with it these days because of the scandal of 2003, it will be negated by the fees that they charge you. So Forbes said this, many years ago, and I think it's a great saying, choose a family, not a fund. Look at the families as a whole and the offerings that they have and the services and the institution, their research organization, how well they've done over decades. And then choose that family, and then you will be able to consider it your one-stop shopping experience for mutual funds. And here are the top 10 mutual funds. Well, maybe. The data is very difficult to cull out of the woodwork. And this is according to Morningstar, September of 2019. So it's about a year and some odd and several months old. But it's difficult to compare the companies to one another because sometimes they're compared to one another not in the correct ways. For example, Vanguard is the number one mutual fund company with almost $5 trillion in assets. But it turns out that number two here, BlackRock, actually manages more money than Vanguard. But not all the money they manage is in mutual funds. They have mutual money investments, types of investments of many different types all around the world. So yes, BlackRock is below Vanguard in terms of mutual fund assets, but they have more money under management than Vanguard. Fidelity is now considered below American funds. And they're the ones who are changing their names to the Capital Group, but they always were called the Capital Group. It was everybody else that started calling them the American funds because they have mutual funds like the Investment Company of America, the Growth Fund of America, the Income Fund of America. So everybody started calling them the American funds, and they said, okay, I guess we're the American funds. And now they're changing their name to Capital Group, even though that was their name all along, because they want to now be global, and they figured a name like Capital Group is better than the name of American funds if you're trying to sell your funds in Europe or Asia or wherever, or Africa. And they are considered actually the number two mutual fund company because when you identify BlackRock as the number two, you're kind of cheating because part of their company really isn't mutual funds. So it gets all mixed up. But these are the big players in the marketplace. Vanguard, BlackRock, Fidelity, American funds. They're all very good companies, folks. You're going to be researching the thrift savings plan. The thrift savings plan in one of your assignments for chapter four. Guess who runs the thrift savings plan? Well, it's actually one of the questions, so I'm not gonna tip you off, but it's one. I'll give you a hint. It's one of these four. And then State Street Global Advisors. They originally a trust and bank. They were a trust company and a bank, and they are. Remember we talked about the custodians. They are go-to custodians for many mutual fund companies who don't really want to deal with the custodian chores. They want to go out and do the research. So they would contract with State Street Research, as it was called. And so they started their own mutual fund, State Street Global Advisors, and the SPDR. What is that? Check that out. That's an interesting. We talked about those. What are those? You'll see. Spiders. And then T. Rowe Price, a very good company, by the way. T. Rowe Price is an excellent company. We have them on our list of companies in the Canvas and on the website. Their websites to check out T. Rowe Price. Invesco is a company that's sort of done a lot of merging with other companies. They recently bought Oppenheimer, a storied mutual fund company. Dimensional Fund Advisors, DFA. Is a company that's very, very popular with financial advisors. And they have some dynamite funds, by the way. But normally people don't go to them as individual investors. They go to them through their advisors. PIMCO is a company that made their fame through bonds. A gentleman by the name of Bill Gross was their bond king, bond guru. And they had a bit of a falling out several years ago. And Mr. Bill Gross moved over to Janus, is it? Janus? Yeah, Janus. And then Franklin Templeton, another excellent company from many years back. They've been hitting on a little of a hard times. They recently bought the folks Legg Mason. Remember the Legg Mason Value Trust, which is now the Clearbridge Trust Value Trust? Which, yeah, I don't know why they did it. I'm not the only one who's been scratching my heads. But check out these companies. And then, as we said, six of the companies that I'm a big fans of, four of them really I'm big fans of, are on the website. They're in Canvas. One of them is not here, and that's called Dodge & Cox. You definitely want to check out Dodge & Cox, folks. They're a really well-run fund family, and they are a bit of a iconoclast. They're a bit of a, we're not going to do what the rest of them did. For many years, they only had two funds, And then they added like a couple more. Now I think they're up to 6. Well, you look at Fidelity and they have 500 funds, or maybe not 500, but pretty darn close. And so you wonder, you know, what's going on at Fidelity, but you also wonder what's going on at Dodge and Cox. They don't even have a money market fund for you to park your money. And they figure, oh, you got a bank to do that, I guess. You link up your account. So realize that there are several good companies out there. There are some that are not so good. There are dozens and dozens, and 12,000 individual mutual funds. So now in the face-to-face class, we would take a look at the offerings of Fidelity, Vanguard, American, and maybe a couple of the others, and realize that the hardest part of mutual funds is just deciding which one or ones you're going to buy, because there's just so many good choices. There's a whole lot of other bad choices. And that's the issue. Once we've purchased a mutual fund, no problem. Nothing else for us to do. Just, you know, take a look at them every 6 months, a year, and just keep putting your $100, your $50 a month away. And then, you know, 30, 40 years from now, you wake up wealthy. Yeah, that's the plan anyway. No guarantees, but so far it's worked for a lot of people. Slide 64. Let's take a look at some of the investor services. We said that the PETA factor was very low with regard to mutual funds. Yes, they are very easy to deal with. Automatic investment plans, dollar cost averaging, systematic investment plans. These are services that allow the shareholders to automatically send a fixed amount of money from your paycheck, from your banking account, into your fund. Pay yourself first. This is a technique that we discuss, a concept that we discuss quite a bit in the Business 121 Financial Planning and Money Management. And in my humble opinion, dear students, this is the absolute best way to invest in a mutual fund. You don't worry about whether or not it's a good time to invest. Every month is a good time to invest $50, $100 a month, more if you can afford it. Comes right out of your paycheck or your checking account. Psst, it's practically the only way that most people will ever invest. You hear people say, oh yeah, I'm going to have $5,000. I'm going to start investing. Where are the $5,000 going to land in your lap, lying around the house? It's just not going to happen, right? Get started now with $50 a month, and you'll be surprised at how quickly it accumulates. The automatic reinvestment plan, we don't really even need to mention it because it happens automatically. It is now the default. Unless you specify otherwise, the mutual fund will take whatever dividends, interest, capital gains are earned, and they will buy additional shares in the fund automatically, which is a good thing, unless we do need the money to live off of, unless we are looking for the mutual fund to be paying our dividends and interest and capital gains to, you know, for us to, you know, meet our day-to-day payments. The automatic reinvestment plans allow an investor to earn fully compounded rates of return. Unless the investor needs the income, it's always a good idea to reinvest dividends, capital gains received from a mutual fund. And as we said, it is the default. Unless you specify otherwise, the company will automatically reinvest your dividends. Now, how do you take the money out? Well, in my humble opinion, the best way, unless you've been saving up for a home purchase or some other one-time or, you know, a few time events, if you're saving up for, say, retirement, a systematic withdrawal plan allows you to automatically receive a predetermined amount of money monthly or quarterly, sometimes annually, but usually monthly. It goes right into your checking account. And here's the deal, dear students. If you start, you younger folks, putting $50, $100 away and relax, you don't have to start right now, especially if you're in college and just making ends meet. But by the time you're 25, 30 years old, as we'll see when we take a look at some illustrations, hypothetical illustrations, you start doing your automatic investment, your systematic investment plan, your dollar cost averaging, silly name, but it's a very powerful technique. Now, 30, 40 years from now, you can take out $2,000 or $3,000 a month for the rest of your life. Is that a deal? Did I mention there are no guarantees? But wait till we get to hypothetical investments. The conversion privilege, the exchange privilege, is the privilege that allows you to move your money from one fund to another within the same family of funds, as we said, not having to pay the upfront fee, the back-end fee, all the other fees involved. But if it's not a retirement account, as we mentioned, it will trigger tax consequences. But we'll discuss taxes along the line. Taxes should not be the tail that wags the dog. Yes, we're going to pay taxes, whether it's in a regular account or tax-qualified account, eventually, unless you put it in a Roth, in which case you could get away with tax-free. Very, very cool. And we'll discuss these at the very end of the semester. But if you've taken Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management, you should know all about Roth IRAs. I'm a big fan of the Roth IRA. Slide 67. How do we purchase our mutual funds? Well, we've already made a reference to this. If it's a closed-end fund, if it's an ETF, exchange-traded fund, you do it through the stock exchange. If it's an open-ended fund, you can do it directly from a broker or from the investment company of itself. And again, the best way, in my humble opinion, is through automatic contributions, your payroll, your checking account. And then when you sell the mutual fund, when you get your money back, you can do it through your stock exchange, through your brokerage firm. If it's a closed end or if it is an ETF, an exchange traded fund. And if it's an open end fund, you can go through your broker or directly through the mutual fund. And in my humble opinion, the best way is through automatic withdrawals, a systematic withdrawal program. Slide 68, taxes. Okay, well, taxes, I know you probably will forget about this until you have to actually deal with it. Oh, taxes are something only an accountant could love. But we do need to at least be aware that, you know, Uncle Sam is listening in. If we get dividends, they are typically taxed as income, unless they are qualified dividends, in which case there's a 20% max, 15% typical, and some people pay even less. If your income is lower and you have qualified dividends, you might pay 5% or even 0%. That's unusual, but that might be it. Capital gains are similar. They are typically charged less taxes than if they were taxed as income. Reinvested dividends and capital gains are still taxable transactions. So you have to save your year-end statements. So what happens? And every once in a while, people jump up and down and scream and holler, and they just say, look, you don't want to pay the taxes? I got a great way not to pay the taxes. Give me the money. I'll pay the taxes for you, okay? People say, look, I didn't get a dime from the mutual fund company. They reinvested my earnings, my dividends, my capital gains, so I didn't have any I didn't have any money coming in my pocket. I still have to pay taxes on it. Yeah, that's the way it goes. You know, you didn't take the money as cash. You reinvested your dividends, but you still earned the money. This is in a regular account. If it's in a retirement account, you don't care. You know, it doesn't matter. Sometimes if the market goes down, you might actually have less money at the end of the year than you started with. And yet you still get a taxable transaction because they threw off some dividends or they sold some shares at a capital gain. That's when people really get angry. I lost money. How come I'm paying taxes? And every once in a while, Congress people say, oh, let's change it so that unrealized capital gains, also known as paper profits, would not be taxed until you sell your mutual fund. Forget it, folks. This ain't going to happen. And if it does, oh my God, is it going to make a mess? Oh, I mean, the tax code is already screwed up enough. Please don't do this. It would mean just, well, the accountants would have full employment, so something good would come out of it. And as we said, if it's in a retirement account, you don't care. The IRS doesn't want to know anything until you take the money out. And then it's taxed as income usually. If you take it out before 59 and a half years old, you might get a 10% penalty, except for the Roth. The Roth, if you play your cards right, is tax-free. And that is a very cool thing. And we'll discuss that way at the end of the semester. But if you really want to know about it, contact me. I'll point you in the right direction, or we'll just discuss it. We also discuss it in detail in Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management. So let's take a look at slide 69. Where do we go for fund information? Where do we do our research and analysis? Well, the first place to start is with the mutual fund itself. The prospectus. This is a statement describing the risk factors, the fund's performance, the types of investments, information about dividends, distribution, information about the managers, and nobody reads them. Unless we've taken Business 123, in which case ask you to check out a few on the website in the face-to-face class. We'll throw one up on the screen and read through it together and realize that these are very useful. Dear students, I'm serious. If you ever have insomnia at night, just download your mutual fund prospectus, start reading, and I promise you in 10 to 15 minutes, you will be snoring soundly. Yeah. I told you my little, I think I told you somewhere about my story with my mutual fund at the brokerage fund company I worked for, where I read the whole thing and my boss could not believe that I actually read it because she had never known anybody who had ever read one. She had never read one. Did I say that right? She had never read one. Yes. The annual report. Some of them used to be very, very detailed and full, chock full of good information. Now, most of them are just very dry and not very exciting, which is kind of sad for me because I loved reading these things. There's still good stuff to be found in them. And I'm going to ask you to go through the prospectus, go through the annual report, among other sources, and find as much information as you can about your mutual fund. And so that's part of your assignment, realizing that the information is not as important as the experience of doing the research. And please listen to the commentary with regard to the research, regard to the assignment, and what we're looking for, what we want you to experience. Cool? Okay. How about financial publications? Well, as we mentioned, Morningstar and Lipper are two of the big companies that review and analyze and research, create reports on mutual funds. Lipper's the older one. Morningstar is the upstart and is now more popular. But both of them can be found for free at the library post-COVID because you can't get in the library these days. But they have online presence. And Lipper used to just say you have to pay us before you get online. Now they give you some information. Morningstar gives you some information, but every 5 minutes they're trying to get you to sign up for their premium service for $30 or $50 or $9 million a month. The magazines Business Week, Forbes, Kiplinger's, Money, Barron's and the like. There are plenty of publications, again, for free at the library, but the libraries are all closed. These surveys that you see, I'm not big fans of because they usually look at the past 3 years, 5 years, maybe just the past year, or even 10 years. I want to see how well the mutual fund has done over 20, 30, 40 years. So I'm going to ask you, can you find some people have been doing very well for longer periods of time? Yeah. So do check out some of these resources on the Infernal Net because the libraries are all closed. What about the websites themselves? The mutual fund companies' websites have gotten really good. They used, when the internet was still new in the late 90s, the mutual fund companies went bananas. They started throwing all kinds of money, creating these wonderful websites, Vanguard's was awesome. T. Rowe Price's was awesome. And then during the 2000 to 2000 bear market, I don't know what happened. I never talked to anybody. But they all basically took away all that educational material. And I don't know why. Probably the SEC told them to. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't understand why they did that. But now they're again promoting education. So check out these websites, if only to check out what they have to say about the current market conditions. Dodge and Cox, they're a little offbeat company. They're based in San Francisco. Oh, by the way, Fidelity's based in Boston. T. Rowe Price in Baltimore. Vanguard outside Philadelphia. Capital Group is based in Los Angeles, of all places. Dodge & Cox is based in San Francisco. Franklin Templeton is a little outside San Francisco. I think it's San Mateo. But Dodge & Cox, you go to their website and you think, okay, San Francisco, you know, very, very haute couture, hip, with it, urbanites. And the people on the videos look like they're all from Kansas or Nebraska. Now, that's not meant to be pejorative. It just doesn't jive with what you'd expect with a company based in San Francisco. But that doesn't mean they're not a very good company. They're an awesome company, and they've done very, very well over decades. And they use that multiple portfolio counselor system where many people work together as a team, but they all make their own decisions. One of the best ways, in my humble opinion, to run a mutual fund. And they have some excellent commentary. So please check them out. Please check out all the mutual fund companies. I know it might sound a little, but this is how I enjoy, and this is what I do for people. Say, what do you do for fun? I say, I check out all the different mutual fund companies, what they have to say for themselves, and what they're thinking is what's going to happen in the next 6 months, 2 years, 10 years, 20, whatever, what they have to say about what happened in the past years. And you start to get a good feeling for which ones really are got their heads screwed on straight and realize that, we're not gods. Even though some people treat us like gods if we do well, and then they treat us like dogs if we don't do well, we're just people making mistakes, some as everyone else. But if they have a good on the ground research organization worldwide, and these companies do, they should be able to do well over the long term. No guarantees. And then the mother lode, the Investment Company Institute, the trade organization. It's a not-for-profit, but it's funded by the mutual fund companies. That's where you'd find just tons and tons of data about mutual funds. Okay? Now, oh my goodness, Piano, I'm exhausted. Me too. We've learned about the different types of mutual funds. We've learned about how their fees and some of the larger fund companies. How do I pick a mutual fund? Well, I'm here to tell you that it's not easy. There's too many options. There's too many good companies. There's a whole lot of companies that aren't so great. And that's what you're up against. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I've chosen my companies that I deal with, and I do my best not to let on so that you say, oh, Mr. Piano likes that company. I mean, that's who I'm going to invest with. I want you to sniff out those that speak to you. And if you really, after this entire semester, still don't feel comfortable, then that is a good sign that you really should be hiring a financial advisor to help you. And remember what we said about the A shares versus the F shares? There's a little presentation that shows you, albeit with somebody with a $500,000 nest egg, what you're paying if you go with the A shares versus what you're paying if you go with the F or FI or I shares. So here's my advice for what it's worth. Pick a mutual fund that invests in high quality stocks or bonds. Now there's a landmine right there, because how do you define quality? Everybody has their own definition, but you know it when you see it. You know when you see high-quality companies, companies that have their roots deep in the economy, is well-diversified across several industries and sectors of the economy. Remember, diversification is a good thing for the 99.9% of us. Has a long-term perspective and a manager, or better yet, as we've said, a management team with many years of experience. Avoid companies that shuffle their managers every few years. This is the way things used to be with most companies. If a manager did well, great, they get to stick around. If not, after 2 or 3 years, you're out of there. And what did that do? That encouraged short-term behavior. Because these people are not stupid. They're the best of the, coming out of the best business schools in the nation and the world. And they see what's going on. So they know that they have 18 months, 2 years to produce. So they are encouraged to think short term and be very aggressive. And great, if it works out for them, great. They get showered with love and attention and money, and they get to keep their jobs. And if it doesn't work out for them, well, they knew that there was a big gamble to begin with. But now companies, the best companies in my opinion, are giving their managers plenty of time to learn the trade, starting them out as research analysts, investing a little bit of money, and then building their responsibility as they go along and giving them 4, 8, 10 years to hone their skills. It's my opinion. And there's companies, investing mutual funds that have been around for decades and have performed consistently well in good markets and bad markets. I don't want to know how well you did during a good market. I'm not interested. Any idiot can do well in a good market. There's a saying on Wall Street, substitute a market for brains, you know. Don't think just because the market's done well you're a genius, you know. You know what, I'm going to pause and find this saying, because now I'm angry at myself. Aha, I remembered. Never confuse a bull market for brains. That's the word I wanted, never confuse. I want to know how well you've done when the markets have done poorly, when the organic matter hit the ventilating device. Because it's going to happen. We know it's going to happen. History tells us it's going to happen. We can see it in slow motion sometimes. Folks, it's happening now. I don't know when. But some of these companies, the evaluations are through the stratosphere, as we'll learn in the subsequent presentations when we do valuations on individual companies. And so I want to know how well you did when everybody was screaming and running around and yelling and running for cover. Because those are the times that are going to dictate your overall long-term perspective. Did you run? Did you hide? Did you sell everything? Don't panic. Okay, so enough said about that. Let's take a look at an individual mutual fund, because we got to start somewhere, right? There's 12,000 of the darn things. So we chose a sample stock mutual fund that's been around for 80 some odd years, 87 years, something like that. And remember, we said if we got 8-9% from mutual funds, we'd be very, very happy, right? Well, these people have done 12% since 1934. And here's where in the face-to-face class, we would take a look at a few handouts. They're on the Canvas, they're in the website, but they're in the individual handouts, and there's a commentary and there's a video for a couple of them. So you're going to see them and walk through them. You'll see them on the website or in through Canvas. Stocks are very risky. Well, the truth is, in the short term, yes, they are. But in the long term, no. If we take a long-term perspective, stocks are not as risky as they look in the short term. Yeah, they could fall 20% in a month, in a week, in one day. It's happened in the past, which means it's probably going to happen in the future. But if we take a long-term perspective and we've gotten 8, 9, 10, 12%, we've done pretty darn well, assuming we didn't panic when the markets fell. And you'll hear people say, now's not a good time to invest. Well, excuse me, when is it ever a good time to invest? The times that people think it's a good time to invest is usually when you hear people yelling, ooh, 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 is it too late to get in? That's not a good time to invest. The good time to invest is when people are going, ooh, is it too late to get out? Those are the times it's a good time to invest. But there's a handout that says, okay, look, what if you invested on the best day of the year for the past 20 years? And what if you invested on the worst day of the year in the past 20 years? How did you do? Well, it turns out, you did obviously better if you picked the best day of the year, and did a little bit worse if you picked the worst day. But the difference is not that great. It's actually not that great. The takeaway, if you will, the moral of the story is you just got to start getting invested. And you aren't going to pick the best day. You aren't going to pick the worst day. If you just put $25, $50, $100 a month into your mutual fund, some days are going to be good days and some days are not going to be so good days. And what about those market downturns, folks? As we've said, it's not fun to lose money. It's just not something you want to do. But if you invest in stocks, it's going to happen. So again, keep a long-term perspective and continue to dollar cost average. There's that phrase. It's not a very great phrase. I've racked my brain trying to come up with something better. It's a very simple concept. We simply set up a system of buying an investment at regular intervals with a fixed dollar amount. $50 a month, $100 a month from our paycheck, from our checking account. It removes the emotion. Remember we said investing is simple, but it ain't easy. And why isn't it easy? Because of the emotions. Well, by simply buying the same amount every month through our paycheck, through a checking account, just as if, you know, we're buying our cell phone payment and we're making our internet payment, we're making our rent payment, we make our mutual fund payment. You are sometimes buying low, you are sometimes buying high, but you're removing the emotion. And what we tell people is, look, I had to convince my wife this a long time ago. I'd say, Anita, because that's her name, Anita, no matter what happens tomorrow, there's good news. When we wake up in the morning, pick up the paper, there's good news. Why? The market's up. Good news. Ooh-hoo. Our account is worth more. Yippee. Our $100 is now $100.25. Right? The market's down. Good news. What? What are you talking about? Good news. Yeah. Yeah. When do you want to buy something? When JCPenney's or Macy's raises their prices or when they lower their prices? The next month, you will get more shares at a lower price when the $50 or $100 comes out of your paycheck or your checking account. You see, the stock market is very different than normal retail places. If Penny's raises their prices 100%, do people run in the door? No, but the stock market, they do. If Macy's lowers their prices by 50%, do people run away? stay away, the market's crashed. No, it's a great time to buy. But the emotions, it's not fun to see your $100 become $60, your $1,000 become $600, your $10,000 become $6,000. You understand. And the cool thing about, and I'm not going to ask you to memorize this until later in the semester. I hope you do. But your average cost per share should be lower than your average price per share. And what does that mean? Because you're paying with a certain amount every month, when the markets are higher, you buy fewer shares. And when the markets are lower, you're buying more shares. So your average cost per share should be lower than your average price per share. Now, with everything we do in this semester, unless we go with a bank or a credit union, it's not guaranteed. If you keep buying the same investment and it keeps going down and down and down and down, oh boy, I'm buying more shares, yippee. But it makes investing very, very easy. And assuming we've purchased a high-quality mutual fund that's been around for decades and have done well in good times and bad times, we should do okay, but there are no guarantees. Now, slide 75. We have a system. Most all mutual fund companies have this system. Insurance companies have it too. They're called illustrations or hypothetical illustrations. They're examples of returns of investments, whether we do a lump sum principal or a stream of investments, dollar cost averaging, or a combination of both. Now, they must be approved. You have to be a licensed individual to show these things. They contain all kinds of disclaimers about past versus future performance. Be afraid, be very afraid. But the news is good. Now, we're not going to show them now. We want you to go check them out because they're very important to your understanding of what a well-run mutual fund can do over decades. Okay? That's what we want you to see. 30, 40 years. And then for you folks in your 40s and 50s, we'll show you what you can do over 20 years. But you really want to have, you want to get started early. That's why I just feel so privileged to be able to teach this at the community college level where we have many younger students. We have older students too. And I'm not trying to say they should just give up because half a sandwich is better than no sandwich. But if I can personally get somebody age 25, age 30, to start putting $50, $100 away, get into the habit, more if they can afford it. I'm just so excited. I'm so proud of myself and so happy for them. Okay, cool enough. Now, we concentrated on that one mutual fund, Investment Company of America, and we showed you how well they had done over 87 years, over 30 years, 40 years, but that ain't the only one, folks. I'm not trying to sell you ICA. There are many companies. Now, these are mutual fund companies that have been around for more than 50 years. There are others. But these have all done better than 10%. Look at that. Look at that. And look at some of them. 1967, 1950, 1965, 1930, 1934. 1935, my goodness. And I want to quickly, I often wonder why I shouldn't put Magellan in there. Because it everybody's, oh, look at that Fidelity Magellan. Well, dear students, part of that is because, remember, I don't know if you remember, I mentioned Peter Lynch racking up 29%, but that was 1977 and 1989. It's never gotten back to its glory days. It's not saying it's not a good fund. I don't think it's the best fund. I wouldn't invest in it. But again, you decide. If I'm going to go with Fidelity, I want to take a look at their contra fund. Check out their contra fund. There's the Dodge and Cox stock fund. It's been around since 1965. They have another fund that's a balance fund that's been around since 1931 or something like that. Now, you wouldn't expect a balance fund to do 10% because remember, it's got bonds in it, well, which are not going to do as well. But there's AMCAP, almost 12. American Mutual Fund, 11.5. Fidelity Contra, almost 13. Fidelity Trend, another very good Fidelity fund, 12.5. 12, there's the Investment Company of America. Invesco just barely made the grade here. It's a new entry into our 50 and older crowd. And then T. Rowe Price, look at that, 13%. A small cap stock fund. Now, we know from Chapter 1 that small companies have done better than large companies, but we also know that they're far more dangerous. And so here's a small cap stock fund that has stood the test of time. And then who was I going to talk about here? Was it? I did that. There it is, 13%. My goodness, 13%. What you wouldn't do for that? I'm happy with 8, 9, 10%. Cool? Now, that's the good news. Really quickly, I want to show you, this is what we would do in the face-to-face. We would show much more than just this guy, but let me get this guy going here. This is a series of funds. These are actually from the American fund companies. But they would see likewise returns. And what this is showing you, dear students, is what happened in 2008. Because we want you to be prepared emotionally for what's going to happen maybe once, twice, or three times in your investing career. These are the one-year returns. Here are the lifetime returns, which are, you know, 10, 13, 11%, not bad. But look at those one-year returns. Oh, my goodness. Look at how badly the growth funds did. Almost, well, this one did a little, there's the small company stocks, right? They got hit harder than the others, but still, 40%. Your $10,000 became, you know, $5,200. In this case, it became $4,800. But we know small company stocks, right? They get hit harder. Those are the growth funds. Remember the growth funds being the spice? Here's the growth and income funds. They are going to go down less, not a whole lot less, but couple of them, you know, 34%, not bad, but 41%, almost similar to the growth companies. And then there's the Investment Company of America. There's another storied fund, 1952, Washington Mutual. Nothing to do with the bank. That's long gone. But in the 30s, there's the equity income funds, the lower 30s. You see the difference? Instead of your $1,000 becoming $600, it becomes $700 or $680 or whatever. So you lose less. And that's why these are favored by people who they want to invest in stocks, but they also want to protect on the downside. And then look at the balance fund. The balance fund went down 30%. So the $10,000 became $7,000 as opposed to $5,000. And then we see the bond funds holding up better. This is what we'd expect. But notice the junk bond fund. They don't call it a junk bond fund, but that's what we call it. High income trust. We'll discuss junk bonds. Losing about the same as the balance fund. But notice that the bond funds lost a whole lot less. In fact, the government securities, the treasury, they went up. Right? That's what you'd expect. It's called a flight to quality. And then there's the municipal bonds. They all went down also. 2008 was a brutal year, dear students. And then the money market fund actually eking out a 2% gain. So do you see we want to show you the bad times just so that you're prepared emotionally. Because as we said, over the long term, the news is good. But there are going to be those times when you are going to be tried. And how you react, that you don't panic, will go towards a long way towards your long-term results, positive results, assuming the world doesn't end. So let us ask ourselves a question. How did the investors do? Well, there's a saying, and it's been shown to be statistically true, that most mutual fund investors do worse than the mutual funds they invest in. Wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. How can that be? How can mutual fund investors do worse than the mutual funds they invest in? Well, it's actually very easy when you think about it, folks. What happens when the markets skyrocket? Ooh, is it too late to get in? And then what happens when the markets plummet? Ooh, is it too late to get out? And that's exactly what this graph is showing you. This graph is showing you in the year 2000, the markets had gone in for almost two decades in two directions, up and way up. And these green bars are showing you mutual fund inflows, people putting money into the mutual funds. It peaked here as the markets were going down. By the time the markets had gone down, and it took 2.5 years between March of 2000 to October of 2002, people started taking their money out at the worst possible time when the markets bottomed. And then what happened? The markets come screaming back. That's the yellow line. And they dumped they put the money back in again. You see, you're not going to be one of these people. You're not going to panic, right? Right. Talk to me. Talk to me. I want to hear it. And then what happened in 2008? You know what happened in 2008. Ooh, is it too late to get out? Yeah, that's the time to be buying. The market comes screaming back. But look, people were so frightened. People were so traumatized by 2008 that it took until 2013, 14 before they started to actively put more investments in than they were pulling out. So most mutual fund investors do worse than the mutual funds they invest in. It's not going to be one of you. You are not going to be one of those investors. What is the bottom line on mutual funds? Choose a fund family, stick with them, reevaluate them periodically. Yeah, I don't know, once or twice a year. But make changes judiciously and sparingly. You like those terms, judiciously and sparingly? As you approach retirement, migrate from stock funds to bond funds. But don't give up on stocks entirely, and we'll discuss this later on in the semester. Even in retirement, we have a long-term perspective, most of us. So we need to have some stocks in our portfolio. Dollar cost average, systematic investment plan, automatic contributions, whatever you call it, $50 a month, $100 a month, whatever it is, whatever's affordable, put it in and forget about them. You know, it makes investing boring, which is a good thing. Don't worry, we're going to learn about buying individual stocks. And sure, if you want some excitement, you can do that. But with your 401k, your 403b, your Roth IRA, I think you could do a whole lot worse. Don't be one of the mutual fund investors that does worse than your mutual funds. Stick with them for the long term. Invest consistently, prudently, with an eye toward long-term growth, and hope that the world doesn't end. Dear students, thank you so much for sticking with us this far. We believe that you are on the right track to building wealth in your portfolio and your life as you live the everything else that's going on in your life. And you're going to be the experts. You're going to be the gurus. And some of you, who knows, there's a future for you in the industry. Thank you so much for being in our class. And, oh boy, we're ready to get started. In our next chapter, we will introduce ourselves to the exciting, sexy, risky world of stocks. Thank you again for being in our class. We are all very proud of you, honored and happy that you're with us.